Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Simmons Energy, a division of Piper Sandler's call titled Capital Raising in the Current Energy Debt and Equity Capital Markets. My name is Ira Green, and I'm a managing director and head of energy capital markets at Simmons. Joining me today is Amrit Agrawal, head of debt capital markets at Piper Sandler. This call is designed to be no longer than 30 minutes, and therefore we will not have time for audience questions. If you have any questions following the call, please reach out to me, Amrit, or your Simmons Piper representative. As a reminder, this call cannot be referenced in any articles, and this conversation should be considered off the record. With that, let's get started. Amrit, I think we have 10,000 people here listening. A lot of pressure. Why don't you begin on the debt side?
Thank you, Ira, and thank you all for joining us today. I'm sure they're all here to listen to you, Ira, so I'll make my section quick. As Ira mentioned, I'll be starting our call today with an update on the debt markets. In the next few minutes, I will provide a recap of the activity we saw in 2020 for energy companies across both the public as well as the private debt markets. I will also discuss our outlook for the debt capital availability, specifically for energy companies as we look forward to the rest of 2021. So I'll kick things off and pick up on page 2 of the slide deck that you all may have received. And I'm going to start with our observations on the high yield market. Interestingly enough, despite a very rocky start in 2020, the high yield market for energy companies ended up on a very strong note. 2020, as some of you may remember, started off with companies like WPX accessing the high yield market in January, which was followed by pretty strong activity by companies like Buckeye, Tallgrass, Range, and others coming to the high yield market early 2020. That activity, however, came to a grinding halt in February, March, and didn't pick back up till late Q3. What we did see was that the market started to open up broadly across various industries, but energy as a whole sort of lagged, and activity started to pick back up late Q3 of last year. Just to put some context around this and give you some numbers, you know, in terms of high yield issuance for energy companies in 2020, we saw that the volume was up by over 100% when compared to 2019, which I'm sure is surprising, kind of looking back, because it seemed like the markets were virtually shut for the entire year. However, it's important to note that a part of the volume increase was a result of fallen angels, which is basically companies that were previously rated investment grade, being included in that high yield volume. So when we stripped out the issuance by fallen angels, what we found was that despite that, the volume was up by more than 60% when compared to 2019. So by any measure, you know, a strong year for energy companies within the high yield market. The good news is that that strong momentum has continued into 2021, with the year-to-date volume already over $16 billion. So with that, we'll move to slide 3, and I'll shift now to discussing the RBL market, as well as the public loan market, also referred to as the Term Loan B market. What we saw there was a very different story play out for energy companies when compared to the high yield market that I just talked about. Specifically on the RBL front, we saw a number of negative developments occur over the course of 2020, including things like reductions in borrowing bases, increase in the frequency of redetermination for those borrowing bases. In addition, we saw a meaningful increase in liquidity blockers or liquidity requirements by RBL banks, and a significant reduction in the overall market capacity with a number of banks sort of pulling away or exiting the business. And a combination of all of these factors had a pretty negative impact on RBLs being available as a financing option. On the Term Loan B front, or the public loan market front, we saw activity that was very muted, and the deals that did get done were generally for larger companies. And even for those companies, we saw that these deals had lower leverage, tighter covenants, and higher rates. So a combination of sort of negative things as a result of what was happening. On the loan side, the one bright spot was the private lending market, which continued to fill the void left by the RBL and public loan markets. And we saw this development occur, you know, over the course of the last 5+ years, and it did continue to pick up steam over the course of 2020. The availability of capital in the private debt markets has increased pretty significantly over that time frame. And lenders now are being able to do much larger deals than they were able to do in the past, as evidenced by one of the examples that we've listed on page 3, the $750 million deal done by Oaktree for Neustar. That's only one example of a number of larger deals that we are starting to see from the private loan market. The Piper Simmons DCM team continued to be very active in 2020, and we helped a number of our clients refinance either maturing debt or finance acquisitions in the private debt markets. With that, moving to slide 3. So what does all of this mean as we look forward into 2021? From our perspective, the key takeaways are that we expect continued volatility in the near term, specifically till the vaccine rollout is much further along and the reopenings as a result are well underway. However, during this anticipated volatility, we do expect there to be good windows of opportunity during which the debt markets will be open. And as a result, you know, we recommend that companies proactively address any debt that they have maturing within the next 12 to 18 months. Just to sort of put some context around that, you know, if the companies are looking to raise, call it $350 million plus of debt capital, they should start by looking at the high yield market. And if that market continues to be open and available at that time, that would likely be the best sort of outcome just from a covenant and structure perspective. For companies that are looking to raise less than that amount, we do think the private debt market should be seriously considered, as we expect the RBL market and the public loan markets to continue to remain under pressure, at least in the near term. So before I wrap up, I will address a question that we had received in advance, and then, so the question that we received was, what's the current market for debt financings for new private acquisitions, and how does the size of the acquisition affect the debt financing? So, you know, as you think about acquisition finance, if the size of the deal is sort of, say, $500 million or below, as I mentioned previously, you know, the company should seriously be looking at the private loan market. And if they are larger and sort of committed financing is available from banks, then the high-yield market should be explored. The good news is that the pressure that we saw in 2020 is starting to alleviate, and debt capital is available again for energy companies across the three verticals. And renewables in particular is getting a lot of focus, not just from energy-focused investors, but also generalists that have an ESG focus and have been looking to dabble into energy broadly speaking. So in closing, I want to thank you all again for joining us today. I have included some market data in the next few pages that I'll leave for your reference. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ira to discuss the equity markets. Ira, back to you.
Yeah, thanks, Amrit. That was great and very insightful. And Amrit has a very dominant position in the energy financing business on the debt side. And if you haven't spoken with him already, you should. They've got a great practice and are super successful. So I'm going to move to equity. Let's go to the energy capital markets update section, which follows Amrit's section. And this would be page 2 of the section. For those of you that don't have it in front of you, I'll kind of read it out to where you can visualize it. But the first chart above, I mean, I think we all know this. This is traditional energy as a percentage of the S&P weighting. The average over time is like 8 to 12%. You can see that in 08 to 014. Since 14, it's been below 8% almost every time except 2016. We were at 2% at the end of 2020 and 3% right now. So I think we all know what's driving that in many ways. Two things. One, returns for traditional energy have been pretty tough. You can see that in the chart below. The E&P index since 2017 is down 46%, and the OSX index is down 67%. The MLP is down 45%. But you look at clean energy index and it's up 206. So a lot of ESG movement as well on top of that, pushing the clean energy side. And I think we all know that on this call. I just want to set the stage. If you go to page 3, kind of interesting, this is energy. This is active managers, not passive managers or ETFs. This is active managers funds flow. It basically covers both traditional and renewable. So you do see a big pickup in October through March of this year, October of last year, a nice pickup, to the tune of, almost $10 billion in the first quarter. A lot of that is renewable, but we have seen some pickup. I know everyone on this call has noticed. In traditional energy stocks, first with E&P, and we see some run in the service side, and I think that's a recovery play that we, all have expected. I think we'll see that throughout the year, and I think it'll be a better year for traditional energy stocks. I'm looking at my screen right now, and, prompt my crude is 65.93. I think we can live with that number, right? The question will be, are the investors there going forward in this sector? And like they have been in the past. And it's ESG dominated, if you will. We're seeing a little bit come back in. There's some certain criteria. E&P is a cash flow play. Service always follows E&P in a lag, if you will. I don't think we're going to see the craziness that we saw in the early days of shale, but some normalcy would be nice. Page 4, if you are an energy investment banker, you cry when you see this page because this is equity issuance over the since 2007. And we hit an all-time high of 43.5 billion dollars of equity issuance in 2016, and we've moved down to last year at 12.6 billion, 2.8 billion so far in this year. There's some shaded boxes. Most dominant in 2020 and 2021 has been renewable. There has been some E&P mixed in 2020. And then in the bottom chart, really everything to date in 2021 has been follow-ons and mainly dominated by follow-ons and secondaries in 2020. A lot of, you might say, and I'll get to this in a minute, wait a minute, what about all these companies that are going public that are renewable companies? Well, a lot of them are doing it through SPACs, which has displaced somewhat the IPO market for reasons I'll discuss in a minute. If you go to page 5, really it shows, traditional energy and have we seen a resurgence here as of late? I think you can point back to EQT doing a deal at roughly a 4% discount late October. That seemed to be when the market was coming back for acquisition purposes. And then the last three that have been done, Liberty Oil Services, Magnolia Oil and Gas, and Cactus, were all pure secondaries, meaning, their sponsors were getting out. And so that's actually a pretty good sign that we are seeing some liquidity here for private equity sponsors. And not a surprise, I've seen some S3 shelf registrations for, I'm not going to name names, large E&P company recently, their sponsors, there's a lot of chatter going on. So it's there, it's varying discounts depending on how you do it. They were all three done in different ways. Liberty was a bought deal. Magnolia was a confidentially Walcross deal, and Cactus, it's mislabeled right here. It should be a marketed deal. They announced and then marketed it with a full day of marketing. So a variety of ways to get those done, but good. We're starting to see that move. Interestingly enough, on page six, let's go over to the renewable side of the issuance. One would expect more. I think the title is mislabeled, has slowed. It had slowed from 17 to 2020 when you looked at renewables. Gosh, you look at it in 13, 14, and 15, some of the deals they were doing on equity raises. Granted, not as big as traditional, but still $6.6 billion in 2015. We're back up in Q4 2020 at $3.2 billion and then $2.3 billion to date 2021 after kind of a valley, if you will. It didn't seem like it, but what this dynamic suggests is as follows. If I am a traditional energy investor and I'm now trying to pivot ESG to the renewable side, what is the supply of available companies that I get to invest in? And the fact that there were not that many IPOs over a long period suggests that the sample size is smaller than traditional energy. So what does that do? I mean, we all supply demand, that's going to push prices. And so those stocks ran like crazy toward, from the election through the beginning of this year up until a few weeks ago, where we've had a cooling off period. But we'll talk a little, I think that will continue to be a theme. If I'm these companies, I don't want to see my stock run that quickly. It's never healthy. Maybe we'll get some stabilization, normalization the way they trade. But we're seeing some activity there. There are three markets open that we continually discuss with traditional energy players, with renewable energy players, and the like. The first one is the convert market. It is completely separate from the add-on market that we just covered. So we covered the follow-on, add-on, secondary, where that is. These are completely different investors, and it's a much more technical market, if you will. And there are some deals, if you are high growth, like Sunrun and NextEra, your coupon is 0%. And in Sunrun's case, you've got a conversion premium of 50%. I've seen them in tech and healthcare at 60, 70%. So that's pretty doggone attractive. But even some of the traditional energy players have gotten things done, like Pioneer Natural Resources. We get a lot. We're very active in converts. We get a lot of reverse inquiry. It's a great tool for an M&A deal because it's really a kind of a 1-2-day marketed process, mainly confidentially, and it's quick to come off the shelf. And once again, you're not picking from your existing investors. Can you do a convert and an equity offering at the same time? Yes, not always perfect, but we've seen a number of folks do those, and we've executed those as well. It depends where the leverage will lie on certain positions from some of the players that we try to optimize, if you will. But that market is there. It's also a great tool for liability management, and particularly where the coupons have been, sometimes they're well below interest rates being paid by companies with debt maturities coming up. So that market's pretty hot, and if you're interested, we're happy to talk to you guys. Another market we've addressed is the ATM market, and I'd like to take a little bit of time on this one. It was a product probably, 5-10 years ago, I thought was for companies that just, were in trouble. Was it like a rights offering, or it was for MLPs, which, think about it. They basically distributed all their cash at the end of a quarter. And then, they had promised investors they'd grow, and they grow through acquisitions, but they got to keep doing equity to pay for those. So that was where that landed. It's a pretty unique product in a few things. One, you're issuing at the market, so there's not a big discount that we showed you on those pages of, you know, average of 10% when you do a deal, plus, you know, plus the underwriter's fee, so underwriter spread. So that's a good tool. The second thing we see is with this increased retail volume, and, you know, we can laugh about Robinhood and Acorns and all those entities, but we've seen a lot of retail volume increase in the energy sector. You know, this is a great product to take advantage, because you can put out 10 to 15% of the stock of the average daily trading volume without, you know, we do this all the time. We've got a number of these that we're executing for energy companies, and you can get that done without impacting the stock price. And you don't report till the end of the quarter on what you've raised. I mean, you put a prospectus out there, it comes off a shelf. You say, okay, I'm going to do a $50 million program, but during the quarter, you only report at the end of the quarter, which is kind of nice. People have used this as a liability management tool, so that's good. Some folks have thought about it, okay, I can accumulate some cash, see if I can go buy some of my bonds back that are trading at 70%, 60%, because I don't report till the end of the quarter. So that's good. But one other advantage of having this is that you get a lot of reverse inquiry. So if you put up I'm putting up a $100 million ATM program, you know, some of these institutional accounts that have had a hard time getting in based on daily volume go, huh, I wonder if they'll do a block trade off that. And so we've done a number of block trades within the ATM program, you know, for our clients that based on the reverse inquiry. And where does that come into play again? Well, if you want to do a regular way offering, let's say you're going to announce an acquisition, you already know, you know, okay, these three folks have done block trades. I bet they're going to want to, you know, get their pro rata position. So you get all this great information. So what I think is interesting is you look in 2020 and the number of energy ATMs pops up all of a sudden. And I would say 14, 15, 16, those are all MLPs, right? Even 17, and they go away. But traditional energy companies are filing these, and heck, Tesla, which would sometimes we like to say is an energy company, they have a $5 billion ATM out there. So we think that's a wise use. Healthcare, still at the bottom right, is the biggest, and the bottom left is the biggest user. They're voracious consumers of capital, but energy is increasing their position. And probably the last thing I want to talk about today is the SPAC market. And I feel like if your next door neighbor doesn't have a SPAC already, you know, things are wrong, right? I mean, it's unbelievable, and it's really been a dominating topic for every call I've been on. I've been on three calls already today, and guess what? You know, SPAC's number one or two, because folks are looking to, you know, sell their company, but it's an alternative you got to look at. But let's look at some of the statistics on SPAC. So, you're bumping along 2010 to 2019, you're moving up from 7 to 59 SPACs. We saw some happen in the couple years ago in the EMP world. There's really only been one or two that worked out for a number of reasons, and a downturn and so forth. So people were thinking, this may not be viable. But 2020 came along, you have the stock market performance, high growth companies. We issued a record 248 SPACs went public. In 2021, we're not even through the first quarter, we're at 189. That compares, like I said, to 59 in 2019. Total proceeds were $83 million last year. It's $60 million this year, so above the $300 million average range. I think most of you probably know how they work, but they're blank check companies that raise money. It's almost like a private equity fund that raises money to go out and look at targets. The nuance is that if you don't find anything in 2 years, the SPAC will give you your money back. So it's somewhat of a free option. And the investor also gets a warrant, could be half a share warrant when they invest. And so you have a dynamic sometimes of a deal being announced, and we worked on a de-SPAC for one where the investors voted yes on the deal, voted though, to redeem their money and keep their warrant as a free upside option on the company. So a lot of crazy dynamics. There's also a pipe involved every time, or usually every time, once a deal is announced, to ensure liquidity on the redemptions plus some of the CapEx. I think the sellers that we're talking to right now, it's almost, in a lot of instances, it's a tri-track process. And maybe I should go trademark that, but you're basically looking at a sale to strategic / private equity, number one. Number two, you're looking at IPO. And number three, you're looking at a sale or a de-SPAC, a sale into a SPAC. A couple statistics recently, SPACs traditionally had bought kind of three times, maybe four times the amount they raised. So 300 million times three is $900 million or $1 billion. Now the average we've seen on the recent closings can be is up to like almost seven times, six to seven times. So the pipe's important, but what that also suggests is a lot of the sellers, I'd say majority of the time, are not getting much money off the table. They are owning a chunk of this. And I'd kind of finish on why are SPACs so popular right now. They're displacing venture capital because a lot of these companies are early stage. They, are somewhat displacing the IPO process, the regular way IPO. But one of the main differences is SPACs get to put forward, unlike an IPO, where the projections are consensus and they come from the analysts and they go out to the investors and they're from the research analysts on the deal. In a SPAC, you can go out, it seems like, as far as you want in terms of projections, even if you're early stage. So you've got 5 years. And some of these things are trading at, revenue multiples 3-4 years out. So a big, big difference between that and an IPO. Because in an IPO, typically the analysts will go out maybe 2 years. And so that would suggest the IPOs are the more mature companies, and the SPACs probably moving up the earlier stage chain. Where does all this go? I do not know. I do know this. We've got a lot of SPACs chasing deals. And then if, as a seller, you're going to be locked up for a while before you can get your proceeds out. I suspect we'll see a dip at some time, just by the law of averages. I don't know when, but it is something as a seller you have got to, as a fiduciary, got to look at, because it's hard to ignore because the valuations are super high. The charts below on this page, essentially are showing you, where the vintage is. So the 2020 SPACs raised, a third of them have either completed a deal or announced a deal. Two thirds are looking for a deal. The 2021 SPACs, almost everyone except 1% are still looking for a deal. And you've got more and more in a crowded space. So it's going to be interesting to see how it works. But we do. We raise SPACs. We've done a number of those. We raise pipes. We're very active on that side, so if you need help there. And we also advise on the de-SPAC side, because you've got to sell the investors on the merits of the deal. So with that, I'm going to end there. It looks like we're right at 12:30. I hope this has been beneficial to you guys. Really appreciate having Amr on. Appreciate all you dialing in. If you have any questions, like I said, ask me, Amr, or your Simmons Piper representative. That's that. A replay will be made available for this call. So, go out, have a great weekend. I know we're one day short, and you may now disconnect. Thanks.